It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The top senators on the Intelligence Committee try to reassure the American people that their probe of Russian meddling in the U.S. election will be professional and not partisan.
That's what gives us high hopes that we can reach a conclusion that has bipartisan support and that we feel confident explored every crevice that we can find.
The intelligence panel's top Democrat told reporters Moscow's meddling is disturbing.
Some of the techniques that Russia used in this election, as we find more and more, I think would send a chill down anyone who believes in a democratic process in this country.
Burr said the Senate committee is just getting started.
We would be crazy to try to draw conclusions from where we are in the investigation.
Also today, Senator Ron Wyden, the top Democrat on the Finance Committee, urged the intelligence panel to dig into financial ties between President Trump, his associates, and Russia. On the House side, Republican Chairman Devin Nunes has been under intense pressure with Democrats and Republican Congressman Walter Jones of North Carolina calling on him to recuse himself from this probe. Critics are accusing him of acting as a surrogate for the White House and not an independent investigator. Today, Nunes fired back.
We're going to do an investigation with or without them. And if they want to participate, that's fine. But
and Nunes accused Democrats of not being serious about the investigation.
As far as I know, they've done very little to even look through the documents that the intelligence agencies have provided. So I think at the end of the day here, we're going to get to the truth and we're going to find out who's actually doing a real investigation. And you'll find out that that we are very much doing an investigation and have been for a long time.
All right, only in the upside-down world of Washington, D.C., should the guy, the head of the Intelligence Committee in the House, who has every authority to go review intelligence wherever he has to go, should now suddenly be blamed because he went to the White House, because the White House is allegedly involved. Well, yes, the White House in many ways are allegedly involved, only the media reporters want to say it's the Trump White House and many of us understand fully it was, in fact, the Obama White House who potentially, likely committed acts of crime by revealing names and surveilling and releasing information that should never have been released and supplied it to agencies, 19 different agencies, so that multiple low-level employees were able to leak information about operatives in the Trump campaign. That's just really smells. But, of course, the left wants to make it seem as though, oh, it's Trump and the Russians. You know, Trump is colluding with the Russians, and that's what they keep talking about. And, you know, reporters are doing their best to pile on and just connect to whatever thin dots there are and ignore the real problem. Pile on Devin Nunes and blame him. Sort of, oh, you know, it's kind of like when you used to play talk with your girlfriends. I'll talk to you girls for a second. And your girlfriend would tell you about another person that you knew nothing about. And they didn't, your girlfriend didn't really know anything, but she'd say, well, she's just kind of, you know, not saying a thing. It's the way you say it. And of course, that's what they're doing in the press. I have to say that the left is pretty nervous about this and for good reason. Many of my friends are saying, okay, then we must broaden this investigation into the interference of the Russians. It has to be bipartisan because we might need to explore the relationships between, let's say, Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama and Vladimir Putin. We might want to do that and just see what connections they had and what deals they made. And actually, I want to tell you that I'm going to do a show on that. Maybe next week we'll do it, where we talk about the sale of 20% of our uranium interests to Russian interests under Mrs. Clinton. And at the time that that happened, then suddenly there are all these donations from that entity into the Clinton Foundation. It's an amazing, messy, dirty story, and that's just one part of it. Also, I just heard in a briefing yesterday on national security that under Bill Clinton and under Hillary when she was Secretary of State, the Russians got some of our real high-tech information on missile defense, and that was done with their cooperation. I could go on and on. So let's talk about the connection with the Russians. Let's do that. Let's find out which party has the closest connections to Vladimir Putin and the Russians and are making those kinds of deals. In fact, Richard Pollack of the Daily Caller has been tracking John Podesta, who was the the campaign manager for Hillary Clinton, the head of, whatever it's called. It's the leading think tank in Washington for progressive issues. John has just got it, he and his brother are all over all the bad stuff. And so Richard Pollack has been writing about the connection between John Podesta and the Chinese, John Podesta and the Russians. And so Richard has written some real explicit things. So this is what happened. Yesterday, John Podesta slapped the Daily Caller, now that's Tucker Carlson's outlet, with a cease and desist letter on Wednesday after the conservative news outlet published a story about the former Clinton campaign chairman and Obama counselor. The letter sent to publisher Neil Patel by Podesta's counsel said John Podesta may have the article said, exclusive, John Podesta may have violated federal law by not disclosing 75,000 stock shares. He may have violated federal law by failing to disclose the receipt of 75,000 shares of stock from a Kremlin-financed company when he joined the Obama White House in 2014. Well, okay, so now Podesta is slapping a cease and desist order, claiming it's totally false. But let me just say that the Daily Caller's article is still there. There are no corrections, and I think the sources are pretty clear. So we'll see how that plays out. But you see why they're worried. They don't, want this investigation to be bipartisan. They just want it to be on Donald Trump and his staff. Mike was not through Mike Emanuel with his report, special report. Let's listen to the rest of it.
A spokesman for the panel's top Democrat, Adam Schiff, says he has been reviewing documents and offering input. Quote, the minority submitted a list of witnesses to the majority yesterday. This list represents only the first of many witnesses we believe should be called to testify. Among the witnesses the Democrats would like to call are FBI Director James Comey and former Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates. Another House Intelligence Republican said Democrats are going after Nunes because he's close to figuring out who might have shared surveillance of the Trump transition with the Obama administration.
We need to know who those people are. We need to know if it was improper. And as it gets closer to that, you hear more and more Democrats saying, wait, we need to stop this investigation. We need to stop Devin Nunes.
The White House is standing firmly behind Nunes and says he's doing his job properly.
He has met with people who are clear to discuss classified information regarding a review that he is conducting. That's how it's supposed to work.
Right now, some suggest the House probe is stalled and in disarray, but those leading the Senate investigation say they are following the facts where they lead.
Yeah, well, we'll find out about that. Richard Burr is chairing the Republican. He's the Republican lead in the Senate Intelligence Committee, and they will be calling Jared Kushner to testify. Jared has volunteered, and many that I'm talking to are saying that is a major mistake. The Jared Kushner should never testify because these committee hearings are nothing more than witch hunts. And we all know, you watch when people testify before the Senate, especially I'll pick on the Senate for a second, they are just, the senators then proceed to make lectures, to make all these outlandish claims. They can destroy anyone. I have seen them, you've watched with me, seen them destroy almost anyone, including Senator Jeff Sessions, who is just as close to almost a blameless man as you can come, the gentleman. They find the way. They keep digging until they destroy. And so that's kind of the way it works right now in Washington, D.C. But yesterday, it was revealed that Evelyn Farkas appeared on MSNBC, and now she was the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense in the Obama administration, and she said some really incredible things. I believe she's talking to Yeah, Morning Joe's sidekick, Mika. Yeah. And so let's listen to what Dr. Evelyn Farkas had to say about what they were maybe doing potentially to the Trump staff. Let's listen.
I was urging my former colleagues and frankly speaking, the people on the Hill. Mm-hmm. It was more actually aimed at telling the Hill people, get as much information as you can, get as much intelligence as you can before President Obama leaves the administration, because I had a fear that somehow that information would disappear with the senior people who left. So it would be hidden away in the bureaucracy, that the Trump folks, if they found out how we knew what we knew about the Trump staff's dealing with Russians, that they would try to compromise those sources and methods, meaning we would no longer have access to that intelligence. So I became very worried because not enough was coming out into the open, and I knew that there was more. We have very good intelligence on Russia. So then I had talked to some of my former colleagues, and I knew that they were trying to also help get information to the Hill.
So Evelyn Farkas, who was no longer in that position, somehow knows all this stuff. And she's proclaiming it publicly to Mika Brzezinski on MSNBC. And she's telling us that, listen, if the Trump people find out how we got what we got, they, you know, that might be a problem. Well, now we know from Sirica.com, who's been doing a lot of reporting on this, that Barack Obama changed how the NSA intercepts of Americans like Donald Trump could be shared and went back to 2011. How they began to broaden the list of people who had access to the private conversations of Americans. And then right before President Obama left the White House, they expanded it so that 20 different officials inside the NSA alone could see who these people were and what they said. And then the FBI had the ability to also unmask American names. And then it was sent out to some, I think, 18 or 15 different other agencies. And so that in itself, just loosely, with the facts that we do know, you can understand why it made it very easy for it to be leaked to places like CNN and Washington Post, private conversations, even of a presidential candidate. So we're going to be hearing more about that. There's more to say about that, but I want to change the topic for a second. I want to talk about healthcare because a couple of things I want to share with you. There was a great article in The Federalist called The Freedom Caucus is the Silver Lining in the Obamacare Debacle. And I want us to put that on our Facebook page so that you can read and share it. I have defended them, and I will continue to do that. I got an email from Terry, who's upset. She says, I've heard your comments with Dave Brat. I know you disapprove of the health care bill. I feel like not supporting the bill hurt Trump and his administration when they were most vulnerable. You just jumped on the Democrats' wagon and sided with them. The Freedom Caucus group is no different than some other groups who say my way or no way. Dave Brat is part of that group. I voted for him, but if he keeps it up, I may have to change. I may have a change of heart. Trump needed supporters, and I feel like you both let him down. It seems like Paul Ryan is getting the blame, but it's actually the Republicans who blew it. Terry, and all of you who may feel that way, let me just say a number of things. First of all, Paul Ryan wrote that bill in conjunction behind closed doors with former Boehner staffers. If that's new to you, that means that they are staffers who have worked very closely with the moneymakers in the healthcare industry. They don't have the best interests of the American people at heart. So Paul Ryan's bill reflected that, was very favorable. And the leadership coalesced around him. They would not allow members of the Republican caucus to have any discussion about it at all. They tried to force it down their throats. President Trump is not a policy person. He trusted Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan kept saying he had the votes, no problem, nothing to see here. That was not true. And so when it came time for the vote, there were actually over 100, at least 100, Republicans who were not going to vote for this bill. It wasn't just the Freedom Caucus, which is about 40, but that's the part that's being lost. It was a very bad bill. It would have been hung around Donald Trump's neck and blamed on him. You can see that, can you not, how that would happen? And my information is there will be a new bill. It's going to be good, so just hang on. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is an excellent way to provide yourself with guaranteed permanent income while at the same time supporting the American Family Association. Here's what one supporter told us.
I very much want to see God's word continue into the next generation. This is a way I can help AFA spread the truth and promote their biblical stand. My experience with the AFA Foundation continues to remind me that I have a small part in helping AFA in the battle for our nation's values.
Financial planning is essential to your family. A charitable gift annuity through the AFA Foundation is one way you can support AFA and the health of our nation. The planners at the AFA Foundation are here to help you do the most with your finances. You can call us at 800-326-4543, extension 345, find us on Facebook, or email foundation@afa.net, and learn whether a charitable gift annuity is right for you.
American Family Radio, impacting lives.
Yes, my name is Tina, and I am from America, Kansas. And the last 3 years, the Lord has just really been moving in my life. But what I wanted to say is, you guys are just really on the ball. You're changing up the ministry in such good ways, and it's just wonderful. It's so profound to me. I downloaded the app because I wanted to listen to AFR Talk. We only get the music station here. So I listen on the app all the time. And I wanted to say, too, that Abraham Hamilton, having him on board is just awesome. You guys are just adding so much to the ministry. I just appreciate it so much. And so I just thank you so much for your ministry. And I'm always praying for you guys. And thank you so much for AFR.
Your partnership with American Family Radio keeps your family informed on the issues of the day. Join us for our 3-day share-a-thon beginning April 4th.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Blake Bramlett. I graduated in May of 2016, and I graduated with a degree in interdisciplinary studies, focusing in psychology and missions. The professors here at TMU have really impacted my life in more than one way. In the classroom, of course, but really, honestly, what makes the experience at Truett better is that they're mentors to us.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
The Volunteer Fire Department in Mediapolis, Iowa, population 1,500, is making national headlines. That's because the fire department has welcomed 6 babies in the past 7 months. The volunteer firefighters say it just sort of happened, although locals suggest there might be something in the water. Still, the guys are glad it all worked out the way it did. They consider each other family, telling CBS News it's a brotherhood that goes far beyond the fire hall. And seeing how everybody knows everybody in Mediapolis, it's pretty much a given the newborns will grow up together and go to school together and hang around the fire hall together. And with 22 firefighters, well, there's a good chance there could be more baby showers down the road. Firefighter Tom Brockett says there could be a simple explanation for the baby boom. Not enough fire calls around town. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
More executive orders. This one signed at the EPA headquarters. President Trump rolling back President Obama's clean power plan to combat global warming.
The action I'm taking today will eliminate federal overreach, restore economic freedom, and allow our companies and our workers to thrive, compete, and succeed on a level playing field for the first time in a long time, fellas. That is what this is all about, bringing back our jobs, bringing back our dreams, and making America wealthy again.
Most notably, it lifts the moratorium on new coal leases on federal lands and sends a signal that the so-called war on coal is over, bringing much-needed relief to coal miners, says EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt.
The coal miners that were at the EPA today, as they heard the president speak, they were very emotional because their industry has been under assault for the last several years. And so for the first time in a long time, Sean, when you talk about optimism, there's optimism and hope that we're going to create jobs across all sectors of the economy because of what the president did today.
But Democrats have been quick to attack the order, prompting an emotional response from green governors like Washington State's Jay Inslee.
I kind of like the species we belong to. And that means we got to have a response to this crisis, and it is a crisis of carbon dioxide, or we are in deep, deep trouble.
Now, already, environmental groups are raising money and mobilizing efforts to push back on the president's actions and vowing to even go to court to battle the order.
All right. Well, Griff Jenkins on Fox yesterday. Of course, they'll go to court. That's what they always do. And remember that Barack Obama populated 30% of our courts around the country. He was very busy when he was in office. And so we have a lot of leftist judges. One of them in Hawaii, you know, just extended his stay on the immigration order that Donald Trump wrote. They're going to fight him in the courts in every way that they can. Seattle, of course, is fighting the whole notion of Jeff Sessions, the attorney general's claim that he is going to come after sanctuary cities and withhold federal funds. They're going to fight all of this in the court, and they will prevail probably many, many places around the country. But I have to say that President Donald Trump is doing his best and succeeding in many cases to fulfill his promises in ways that you can't see. And one of those was by signing this executive order just 2 days ago. Well, Dr. Cal Beisner, who is with Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, good friend of ours, is all over this topic. And he was in Washington. I don't know if he was there at the signing, but we're going to ask him. Cal, were you there?
No, Sandy. Thanks, by the way, for having me back on the show. I was in Washington the week before for the 12th International Conference on Climate Change, and I was actually not scheduled to speak for that, but they wound up asking me last minute when someone else's flight was canceled. And so I said there some things that actually are quite closely related to the president's executive order that he signed on Tuesday of this week, in that what I pointed out was that a clean, healthful, beautiful environment is a costly good, and richer people can afford more costly goods than poorer people can. And that's why, frankly, you find the cleanest, healthiest, most beautiful environments in wealthy countries, and you find the dirtiest, least healthy environments in very poor countries. That's not really difficult to figure out. And President Trump's executive order, by enhancing Americans' prosperity and enhancing their freedom, which is a very important link to prosperity, actually portends a cleaner, healthier, a more beautiful environment for us.
Cal, let's back up just a second, because Barack Obama signed an executive order, and they always have such wonderful names, you know? I remember when he was going to stop the rise of the oceans, that sounded good too.
Right.
Yeah, well, so this is the name of the executive order was the Clean Power Plant Executive Order. Well, that sounds really good. Who wants dirty power plants? But what, in effect, did that Obama executive order do?
Well, the Obama Clean Power Plan, which actually came out from the EPA, it was a long engineered thing. The Clean Power Plan would have essentially made the continued use of coal for generating electricity in the United States impossible. Current plants would have run down their lifetimes pretty quickly, and they wouldn't be replaced by other coal-powered plants because the carbon dioxide emissions from burning coal are significantly higher than the carbon dioxide emissions from burning natural gas. And the Clean Power Plan was all about reducing CO2 emissions to reduce global warming. But interestingly enough, the Clean Power Plan, the documentation underlying it from the EPA, acknowledged that in fact it would not make any measurable difference in global average temperature over the long period of time, though it would cost hundreds of billions of dollars a year to Americans and would result in higher energy prices. And at the same time, of course, it completely ignored the fact that adding carbon dioxide to the atmosphere is actually a very good thing in that it makes plants grow better. And as plants grow better, agricultural crop yields rise. That means more food. That means lower prices for food, which means much better availability of food for the poor around the world.
You know, I want to read a little bit of this executive order now that Donald Trump signed. As a response to that, this is a very big deal. I have to say, this is a very big deal. You know, Cal, I've watched I know you have too. I remember the first, in the early days of our months of the Obama administration, I remember when that a Gibson guitar plant was invaded with a SWAT team for, you know, using a wood, a kind of wood, in making their guitars, which was outlawed, not here, but by international law, out of some obscure law. They sent the EPA in, SWAT team, and caused tremendous disruption. And that was a story repeated, different particulars, same but different, all over the country as the EPA became a draconian, a thing to be feared, and harmed business persons and put such an onerous burden in terms of regulations and also, you know, jailing people for regulations, not laws duly passed by the Congress, but by just regulations by bureaucrats at the EPA. This is a major announcement, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. This executive order, I think, Sandy, is going to save the American people hundreds of billions of dollars every year that would have been wasted on purely symbolic efforts to fight global warming. Symbolic, as I said, because as the EPA pointed out, the Clean Power Plan would do nothing to reduce global average temperatures. It would not have enough impact on CO2 emissions to have any difference. But the executive order doesn't just simply set aside, for all practical purposes, the Clean Power Plan. It has some other really important elements to it that make it, for instance, it lifts a short-term ban that Obama had placed on new leases for coal mining on public lands. That means that some coal miners can go back to work. It effectively blocks fulfillment of the U.S. intentions under the Paris Climate Agreement. It doesn't actually pull us out of the agreement. I would have liked to have seen it do that. But for all practical purposes, it means that we cannot do what we said in Obama's signing of the Paris Agreement, that we would do in our effort to reduce global warming, which, by the way, also would have been essentially nothing. Even full implementation of all the intentions announced by all 195 or so countries that signed the Paris Agreement would only have reduced global average temperature at the end of this century by 0.306 degree centigrade. In other words, not really measurable, certainly not with any impact on ecosystems or human economy or human well-being. But it would cost about a $1 to $2 trillion per year for the 70 years from 2030 to 2100. So, in other words, $70 to $140 trillion. So, this new order by President Trump keeps the United States from participating in that effectively and saves us billions of dollars while not doing any harm to the environment.
Just as some other things that may not affect people directly, but I think it's really interesting. The Obama administration had ordered every single federal agency to include climate change, just as they did with the military, to include climate change effects in calculating costs and benefits, which are immeasurable. That makes people go through, you know, kind of a jump through so many hoops bureaucratically. Paperwork, I think teachers understand that when they have to are required to fill out all of these forms assessing kids on things that are just on a number scale, which are unassessable. Anyway, I digress, trying to make it relatable. But that's been stopped, hasn't it?
It has. And in fact, not only does this order say that the agencies no longer have to include climate change effects in all of their calculations of cost and benefits, but also this order requires the recalculation of what is called the social cost of very deceptive wording here, social cost of carbon. It's actually the social cost of carbon dioxide. You know, back when you and I were in elementary school and we studied the periodic table, we learned the difference between an element and a compound. You know, a compound is a compound of two or more elements together. Well, carbon is an element. Carbon dioxide is a compound. Carbon, in its dust form, is risky to human health because if you inhale it, it can cause lung diseases. But carbon dioxide is an odorless, colorless gas that is non-toxic to human beings at concentrations 20 to 30 times as high as the concentration in the air around us today, and we will never push the Earth's atmosphere to that high a concentration of CO2. But CO2 is very good for plants. They grow better with more of it, which makes more food for everybody. But the Obama administration had adopted a means of calculating the so-called social cost of emitting carbon dioxide into the atmosphere that exaggerated the harms and completely ignored the benefits. This new executive order says, no, we need to recalculate this. And as we do so, we're going to pay attention to the benefits of CO2 in the atmosphere as well as the risks. But we're also going to pay attention to the fact that the best empirical estimates now of how much warming come from added CO2 in the atmosphere indicate that it's, oh, at most half, more likely a third to a quarter of what the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has been claiming, which means that it just simply doesn't warm us as much. So the social cost of carbon dioxide is actually going to turn out to be a social benefit, I think. We're going to find that we get more good from added CO2 into the atmosphere than there is any harm.
Well, it certainly is. It's radical, and it's part of what he promised. It's about part of the outgrowth of putting Scott Pruitt in charge of the EPA. These are good things that President Trump is accomplishing. Cal, we only have a couple of more minutes, and you alluded to this when you started, but let's come back to it to end. You've written this piece, which, by the way, we're going to put on our Facebook page, which so people can share why this is a good thing. You say it's a boon to America and the environment, but you say that the greatest threat to the environment is not affluence, it's poverty. Say again, why? Make that case again as we close.
Yeah. Well, a clean, helpful, beautiful environment is a costly good. And richer people can afford more costly goods than poorer people can. I mean, this is why we see rich people driving Maseratis and poor people driving, Datsuns and Kias and things like that. And so... As people get richer, they not only want a cleaner environment, but they also are able to afford the costly technologies that produce a cleaner environment. And when we waste trillions of dollars fighting global warming needlessly, and when the risks of poverty are much, much greater than the risks of anything having to do with climate, then we're less well off. We prosper less than we otherwise would, and so we can afford less a clean environment. Because Trump's order will prevent our wasting trillions of dollars fighting global warming, that makes us more prosperable, therefore we'll have a cleaner, more healthful environment.
Cal, some are pushing back, saying coal miners are not going to find new jobs. The coal industry is already devastated. Is that true? Do you think that their coal mines will be restored to functioning and coal miners will find work again?
Well, Sandy, I think a few will, but the long-term trend of employment in coal mining is downward in the United States, not around the rest of the world, in India, China, and many other places, certainly in Africa. We'll see more and more use of coal. But the main reason why employment in coal mining has fallen is automation, and then the more recent reason is simply that natural gas is getting cheaper and cheaper by comparison, and so more and more electric utility industries are turning to natural gas instead of coal. But the Obama administration essentially waged an eight-year-long war on coal, singling it out to try to get it shut down completely. I mean, Obama boasted that if he were elected, sure, you could open a coal-fired plant if you wanted to, but you would go bankrupt because his regulations would force that. This sets aside all of that, and it recreates a level playing field between coal and natural gas. And so, you know, coal will lose some of the impediments to its success. We'll see some return of employment in the coal industry. Not a great deal, but it's certainly better than nothing.
Okay, thank you, Cal, for giving us your wisdom this morning on this. By the way, it's Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation. We'll put Cal's article, his comment on this, on our Facebook page, Trump's Energy Independence Order, a Boon to America and the Environment. Cal, great to talk to you, and thanks so much for this morning.
Sandy, thanks very much, and your listeners can come to cornwallalliance.org to read all our papers and articles.
All right, cornwallalliance.org. Thanks, Cal. All right, Sandy Rios with you in the morning on AFR Talk.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. New Zealander noted speaker Trevor Loudon received a standing ovation at an event hosted by ADA. Trevor Loudon brought the message loud and clear regarding defending America and American exceptionalism. If we hope to keep our freedom, Trevor stated, there are things we can do. Several times, Trevor urged us to use social media to join in the battle for public opinion. Tweet out truth, counter the deceitful narratives on Facebook, comment with the truth, and point out the fallacies for what they are. Encourage people, lastly, to let this administration and this 115th Congress know that we expect them to stand for faith, family, and freedom. Finally, if you weren't able to attend this event, you'll want to order the CD or DVD. Call 231-924-4050, 231-924-4050. This is a Decency Minute. Find us at americandecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
The financial world certainly can be intimidating, and our livelihood, of course, depends upon it, but God is in control of all things. Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. I take your calls every day and give you answers from a biblical perspective and break down the day's financial numbers to help keep you informed. Financial Issues, every weekday morning at 8 o'clock Central Time and Saturday mornings, 10 o'clock Central Time on American Family Radio.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
American Family Radio, impacting lives.
My name is John Huber, and I can't even explain what exploring the Word has meant to me. It's a constant on my drive back home from work every day in a time when it's so easy to not spend time in the Word. That is my constant. That is my time in the Word with Alex's intellect and Bert's charming wisdom. I gotta tell you, it's just a special time. It's time with the Word, but even more importantly, what sticks out in my mind is when someone calls and has a need, the compassion and the love in their voice, and when they stop and pray for folks, it means the world to me, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Your partnership makes a difference. Join us during our 3-day share-a-thon starting April 4th. American Family Radio, boldly standing for truth for your family.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Federal Judge Derek Watson doubled down yesterday, extending his stay on the implementation of President Trump's revised immigration pause order that Hawaii's Attorney General calls constitutionally incorrect. In fact, it is Judge Watson who is wrong about the president's authority pursuant to the U.S. Constitution and statutes. Like his predecessors, Mr. Trump clearly can prevent the entry into the United States of individuals he deems, for whatever reason, to be inadmissible. That would include permanently barring Sharia-adherent Muslims who seek, whether through violent means or others, to impose their totalitarian doctrine in this country. Of course, Mr. Trump has not done that with either version of his immigration pause executive order, but it is the jurist, not the president, who is constitutionally incorrect in arguing that our chief executive cannot act in such a manner to protect this republic and its people. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
What we're trying to find is common ground.
Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti being optimistic after big city mayors and police chiefs met behind closed door this morning with the Department of Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly. At issue, the Trump administration's plan to withhold federal grant money from sanctuary cities. It's an immigration policy that could hit those jurisdictions where it most hurts, in the wallet.
We are opposed to any funding being taken away as a punitive measure.
Blocking the common ground. background that Garcetti seeks is deep confusion over what sanctuary means. The Center for Immigration Studies defines it as a, quote, policy that is non-cooperative and obstructs immigration enforcement. The center finds 306 jurisdictions meet that definition, including Rockville, Maryland, where the city manager this week denied it offers sanctuary.
A misperception has been circulated questioning whether Rockville complies with federal law. Absolutely, we do.
Los Angeles is another city often cited as a sanctuary.
Nothing could be further from the truth. We work every single day with ICE and other folks.
We're not sanctuary cities, we're American cities. These threats of holding back funding from cities across America, these are taxpayer dollars.
Austin, Texas Mayor Steve Adler explains this parsing of the definition of sanctuary and the legal significance it holds.
To be clear, somebody that is in this country undocumented has committed a civil violation. Not a criminal violation, but a civil violation.
Well, that's interesting. That's the mayors of these sanctuary cities weighing in on this, you know, feeling a little nervous to think that their funds may be withheld, some of them at least, because they're ignoring immigration laws. You know, it is a very serious problem. I don't need to explain that to you. We've watched what happened in Rockville, Maryland. We covered the story of that little girl being raped in her school by two illegal immigrants, 17 and 18, who were in the ninth grade, by the way. The whole thing, it's not just sanctuary cities. It's not just, it's all of it. It's Ann Corcoran's organization. It's bringing people up, the Refugee Resettlement Program, which is legal, but it is absolutely out of control. These charitable organizations are making millions of dollars, including Catholic Charities, Lutheran Charities, and a Baptist charity. It seems like it's an equal opportunity wealth maker for people in the guise of their Christian faith cooperating with undermining the safety of the country. I want to read to you. This is an email from Stephen, who's a teacher. He said, I teach at a Title I school in Texas, north of Houston. The majority of the students are from Mexico, whose parents are most likely illegal immigrants. There are so many who don't speak English, they need teachers who speak Spanish, and there are not enough bilingual teachers, so we've actually started bringing in teachers on work visas from Mexico. So not only are the taxpayers paying for the students' education, they're having to pay for Mexican educators as well. Amazing, amazing story. And another story from the Washington Post this morning. Hispanic contractors are getting death threats because they are bidding on building Trump's border wall. And they give one example here. This is Michael Evangelista Yesaga, who is the chief executive and owner of the Pena Group, which is headquartered in Fort Worth. His grandparents immigrated from Mexico. He said he fielded five death threats one morning alone this week from random people calling into the office and just screaming. And he said, every sovereign nation has a duty to defend its borders, he told the callers. Unfortunately, he said, a certain segment of American Latinos have cast supporters of the border wall as racist. And on it goes. You can see how this is going. You know, when we saw and have observed that the opposition to Donald Trump have said to resist on everything, and that's what they're doing, whether it's in the courts, whether it's giving death threats to Hispanic builders, you know, who might want to help build that wall or have a part in it, who are American citizens, have been here for generations and actually feel like there should be a border. You know, this is what they do, call them names and create a very dangerous situation in order to stop it. It's just we are watching it unfold in amazing ways. And along with that, of course, comes the expansion to the whole notion of immigration, whether it's the immigration pause, whether it's extreme vetting that the president is calling for, that the Hawaiian judge has stopped, you know, one Hawaiian judge claiming. But remember, that lawsuit was brought by the imam of the largest mosque in Hawaii. It's based on him saying that his mother-in-law would not be able to come to visit. It would be an interruption to her. And, of course, there was no record of her having visited, I think, in several years, and she wasn't planning on a trip, but that doesn't matter. It's some sort of harm, and so that's the basis upon which this judge, he said it's a Muslim ban, which it is not. It is from Muslim-majority countries. It seems like it's mostly Muslims who are creating terrorism. That's a fact, who are acting out on terrorism around the world. And yet, you know, it's so they're going to stop the president in the courts. They will stop him by threatening people that cooperate. They stop them by, you know, intimidating people like you and like me who believe in the policies that President Trump ran on. So you know what? My advice to you is just hold firm. No apologies. I was in a hotel yesterday, and there was a girl from can't remember. Dutch. She was from Holland. Talking to her, and she said, "I said, oh, you guys just had an election, didn't you?" And she said, "Oh yes, and thank goodness our Trump didn't win." I said, "Well, you know, I like Geert Wilders, and I like President Trump. Is that mean you don't like me anymore?" So, you know, my point is that to try to diffuse it with humor and don't accept it. Don't accept the vitriol, the hatred. You know, give people permission, actually, to feel a different way by taking a bold stand. That's exactly what I think we need to be doing. We have a serious problem, and I want to share with you another email I got. This is from Nicole. It's actually very personal, and Nicole, it took a lot of... It was on Facebook, so many of you may have already read it. It's our Sandy Rios in the Morning Facebook page, but I want to read what she had to say. She said, "I thought about writing this a few times. I studied Arab-Israeli relations in grad school, and this is at Purdue, so I was very familiar with many of the teachings of Islam. However, my good friend was Muslim, and I thought these devout Muslims who opposed us as infidels and women as cattle were in some far-off place. I then went with my friend to eat at a restaurant in Purdue. Halfway through our meal, she looked scared and sick. She said, 'We have to leave.' The men next to us were speaking in Arabic about raping me, keeping me in a closet, and ultimately killing me. They were laughing and saying Allah would love it because I was a dumb American blonde. I'm still sickened to this day, and it's been 12 years. These were educated men at a prestigious university. How are we to think it is only a few extremists? Please continue to educate people on the true end of multiculturalism. It may be too late for many in Europe, but hopefully not for us." And Nicole, thank you. I really am kind of speechless about that, but I do think this is a prime example of why we are putting Americans at risk by not making sure that the people we bring into this country, whether they come across the southern border or whether they come from the Middle East, whether they come from Marxist, former communist Russia or Croatia or Eastern European countries, if they do not embrace democracy, freedom, and believe in assimilating, in learning the language and assimilating to our culture, they should not be here. They should not be here. And if they hold, in addition to that, views that women are just property, not worth any regard, can be beaten, raped, punished, killed if women don't, you know, according to the rules, brothers and fathers can actually kill sisters and daughters if they embarrass the family. It's an amazing thing. If that's what they embrace, then why in the world would we not want to stop a system that just lets them come in without any questions asked? And let's say, you know, they become educated. I remember the story several years ago. I think I was on radio in Chicago when this happened. There was a Muslim in the Northeast. I believe it was Pennsylvania. Very well-educated, very Western-looking, with a beautiful wife. Both of them dressed Western clothing, very articulate. And his stated goal was to bridge the gap between the West and Islam. And he talked about that a lot. And what happened was he got very jealous. Something was happening with his wife, and he beheaded her. He owned a television station, I believe it was in Pennsylvania, or it might have been New Jersey. And he beheaded his wife, this man who wore a suit and talked about assimilating with Western culture, beheaded his wife. And this is, I think, kind of reflective of what Nicole's saying here. This is, we cannot... I do think that there is, the left would like to give the impression that it's just men in robes running around wildly in desert areas who are believing and embracing these tenets of Sharia law. But it isn't. It isn't. You know, Osama bin Laden was highly educated, very articulate and well-spoken. These are very bright men. The Arab world is filled with tremendous, I mean, okay, I'm going to make a statement that, yeah, I'll probably get email about this, but I think when I think of Jewish intellectuals, I think of, you know, they're just incredibly intelligent, articulate. They really do create and think in ways that seem above the normal man. I think so. I think that as a group, they really are very productive intellectually. Well, the Arab world is the same way. They have brilliant minds. Not all of them, but they have within that world, they have some absolutely brilliant minds. And many of these brilliant minds are adherents to Sharia. And so, you know, brilliance does not equate to morality. Brilliance doesn't equate to right thinking about God or understanding. There are things that cannot be obtained by IQ. The wisdom of God is not imparted according to IQ. That's why even children and even people who have mental problems or disorders or can embrace and understand the message of Christ. It is infinitely complicated for the highest of intellect, but also infinitely simple so that people can grasp it. That's the brilliant genius of the God that we serve. So high IQs and brilliance and great teaching can exist in a person without any kind of wisdom or without any kind of moral compass. And I think that's what we're seeing in the Arab world. So if you have this in your head, this image that adherence to Sharia that you see with ISIS, you know, running around on trucks with their guns blaring, that they're somehow inferior intellectually, that's just not true. There are some brilliant minds in that movement. You know, I think of Andy McCarthy, who got to know the blind sheikh during the after the bombing of the first World Trade Center. You know, Andy was the prosecutor in that case, and he had to learn Islamic law in order to prosecute the blind sheikh because the blind sheikh was an Islamic scholar, a Sharia scholar. And so that's why Andy knows what he knows. Brilliant mind. Andy had had his hands full prosecuting that. Of course, the blind sheikh was found guilty, but we just need to disabuse ourselves of the notion that this is an ignorant bunch of people who don't know any better. It is really represented and run by and led by people who have brilliant minds. I think of the Muslim Brotherhood, who adhere to Sharia, and yet they very cleverly disguise themselves as normal citizens to Muslim Students Association, Islamic States of North America. I think of those that have infiltrated on Capitol Hill, who friends of mine embrace willfully blind to their connections and to who they truly are. It's an amazing thing, and I think it's a good thing, Nicole, for you to write this because you give us warning about what we need to be careful about. It isn't what we look like on the outside. It really is what we believe in the parts of us that you cannot see. One other just quick note on a different topic. Today, North Carolina are set to, the lawmakers are set to vote on a bathroom repeal. They have been threatened again by the NCAA. It said they've said they won't come into North Carolina and have events unless they repeal this bill. So there's an effort underway to repeal it. And so we need to pray for the people of North Carolina. This is just a travesty unfolding, something that is just absolutely untenable being foisted on the American people by these big corporations. I'm not sure what the solution is on that, but give me time and let's think collectively what we can do to stand up against this blackmail, really, is what it is. All right, well, this is Sandy Rios. And I'm wishing you a great rest of the day on our knees before the Lord, praying for wisdom. All right, see you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.